You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of the lecture cycle by Rudolf Steiner, entitled The Spiritual Hierarchies in the Physical World. This is Lecture 8, entitled The Spiritual Hierarchies, the Zodiac and the Human Being, given on April 17, 1909, in the evening. In our presentation of higher beings and their relation to our universe and solar system, we come today to the chapter that will be the most suspect to our contemporaries who receive their view of the world and their circumstances from ordinary popular scientific knowledge, because here we must touch on matters absolutely unimaginable to the modern scientist. It is not a matter of contradiction. Anyone firmly grounded in occultism can survey the facts of modern science from this vantage point. You will not find any contradictions between what has been said here and facts of modern science. It is just that the harmony between the two is not easily established. But if you always have the patience to press forward, you will gradually see how individual facts unite to form the whole. Perhaps I should also mention that some of what has been dealt with in these lectures has been considered from a different standpoint in the lecture cycles held in Stuttgart and Leipzig. Footnote, first one was Universe, Earth, and Man. That's 11 lectures given in Stuttgart, August 4th to the 16th, 1908. And the other cycle he's mentioning is Egyptian Myths and Mysteries, 12 lectures given in Leipzig, September 2nd to the 14th, 1908. End of footnote. If you take them superficially, you can find some contradictions between this or that assertion. This is only because it is not my task in my lectures to speak about speculative theories, but about facts gained through clairvoyant consciousness, which appear differently when viewed from various aspects. To use a comparison, the picture of a tree drawn from one side will look very different when drawn from another, and yet it is one and the same tree. The same is true of descriptions of spiritual facts when illuminated from different sides. Certainly, taking a few particular ideas as a starting point, it is easy to set up an abstract system. But we are working from the bottom up. The crowning achievement of this approach will be an harmonious unity of the whole. Above all, we must consider each assertion as to what sense and from which standpoint an assertion is made. For example, a popular scientific work states that air or gas on Jupiter must be as thick as tar or honey. From the viewpoint of spiritual science, it could be said that this is a grotesque notion, and the way I chose to express this emphasized the grotesqueness of the matter. Yet from the modern scientific side, one could argue, quote, "Don't you know that modern physics can produce liquid air as thick as honey or tar?" Unquote. Although this is a self-evident scientific fact, it is irrelevant to our considerations. What science calls air can be densified to such an extent, there is no doubt about that. But from the viewpoint of spiritual science, this is as valid as saying water can be turned into something as hard as stone, namely ice. Indeed, ice is water, but this is not the point. What matters is whether we learn to consider things in their various functions in a living way, or in the dead manner of modern science. It is obvious that ice is water, but what would be the response of someone who is used to driving a mill with water if advised to use ice instead of water? The abstract concept that ice is water is irrelevant. What matters is that we come to understand the universe in its dynamic activity. This requires perspectives very different from abstract notions of a purely material metamorphosis related to density. We could no more breathe air as thick as honey or tar than drive a water mill with ice. This distinction is important for spiritual scientific observation, for we do not observe orbs in the universe as they are typically regarded today, namely as some material lumps of a particular size that move around in cosmic space, which modern astronomical mythology views as simply material orbs. We observe them in their living soul spiritual state. That is, we observe them in their entirety. Thus we must consider, within this totality, what we call, in a spiritual scientific sense, the creation of the individual bodies of the universe. For our first example of the creation of a cosmic body, let us take ancient Saturn, from which we know our evolution proceeded. To begin with, ancient Saturn was as large as our whole present solar system. What one calls old Saturn, in its beginning stage, was about as large as our solar system. But we should not simply imagine it as a material globe. You will remember that on ancient Saturn nothing existed yet of what we have today as the three physical states, solid, fluid, and gaseous. There was only warmth or fire. Let us represent this primeval globe of warmth by a circle. You will remember, we said, that at the point where the primeval globe of Saturn develops into the sun globe, those beings who form the zodiac appear surrounding the sun globe. I indicated, however, that the zodiac already surrounded ancient Saturn, though not as compactly as during the evolutionary stage of the old sun. Around ancient Saturn, therefore, we must picture the activity of thrones, cherubim, and seraphim, who spiritually represent the zodiac. The outer circle in the diagram represents the zodiac spiritually. You might ask, how does this agree with the modern view of the zodiac? It agrees completely with it, as we will demonstrate in the final lectures. You should picture the situation as follows. Imagine placing yourself at a particular point on the Saturn globe. If you now raise your hand and point upward with your finger above this spot on Saturn, you will find the region of certain thrones, cherubim, and seraphim. If you move from there and indicate the area beyond, you will point out another region of thrones, cherubim, and seraphim, because groups of these three beings form a circle around ancient Saturn. Suppose you then wanted to point in the direction of certain thrones, cherubim, and seraphim. Remember, these beings are by no means the same, like a group of 12 identical soldiers. They differ considerably from one another. Each bears its individual stamp, so that depending on where one's attention is directed, one sees quite different beings. So, to point out a particular group of thrones, cherubim, and seraphim, one denotes them as a particular constellation. The constellations are like signposts. In one direction, over there, are the thrones, cherubim, and seraphim, known as Gemini, the twins. Over there, Leo, the lion, and so on. They are, so to speak, guideposts that indicate the direction where particular beings may be found. So we conceive of the constellations as guideposts or boundaries between these regions of beings. The constellations of the zodiac are more than mere signposts, but we must make it clear that, as a first stage, when we speak of the zodiac, we are referring to spiritual beings. The thrones are the first to exert their activity on the fiery form that we call ancient Saturn. They have reached a stage of development that enables them to pour forth their own substance. They cause their own warmth substance to seep into the mass of Saturn. That is how, as I have described, a series of quote-unquote eggs, perhaps a strange word to use, yet they have this form, appear all around this structure. You might ask about the substance as such. Did a warmth substance already exist? What existed before can only be described as a neutral cosmic fire that was fundamentally one with universal space. In other words, to begin with, there was only space. This was marked out, so to speak, and now the warmth substance of ancient Saturn was made to trickle onto the surface. As soon as the warmth substance was poured into ancient Saturn, spiritual beings became active from two sides. We have mentioned previously that here in the inner part of the Saturn space we find the powers or spirits of form, the spirits of movement or mights, and the dominions or spirits of wisdom. The powers, mights, and dominions are active from within. The cherubim, seraphim, and thrones work from outside. And as a result, a cooperation occurs between the beings working from the outside and those active within. In the first lecture, we said that one can distinguish inner soul fire, experienced inwardly as inner warmth and well-being, and outwardly perceptible fire. Between these two is a neutral warmth contained in the egg-shaped forms. Spread above them is soul warmth, as if streaming in from outside, but also holding itself back slightly. It is as if radiating soul warmth were held back because of the neutral fire within. The perceptible warmth is pushed back from within. Thus, what was previously delineated as a warmth egg is enclosed by two currents, namely an outer stream of soul warmth and an inner stream of warmth that would have been perceptible to the outer senses. Only the inner part, therefore, is composed of physically perceptible heat. Now, because of the working together of the outer and inner warmth, the Saturn eggs begin to rotate. Each single egg inscribes a full circle and comes in turn under the influence of the various thrones, seraphim and cherubim, situated at the periphery. Then something strange occurs. On its journey, this egg finally arrives again at the point where it came into being originally. Parenthesis, I am describing these facts according to spiritual scientific observation. End parenthesis. When it reaches this point, it becomes stationary. It cannot go further and comes to a halt. Every egg is created at a particular point, travels around the circle, and is stopped at the point where it originated. This creation of eggs lasts only for a specific period of time. After this, no further warmth eggs come into existence. When all of these eggs have arrived and are stopped at one particular point, they fall on top of each other, forming a single egg. Thus, at their point of origin, the eggs halt and come to rest. Naturally, from this moment, after which no new eggs are formed, the eggs all gather together and cover themselves. A globe is thus created on the circumference, but naturally only over the course of time. This globe consists of the densest part of the fire substance, called Saturn in the narrower sense of the word, for it occupies the position of our present planet Saturn. As previous stages are in a certain sense repeated, so were whole processes repeated at the origin of our Earth. Our present Saturn came about in a similar way. It, too, was held back at a particular point. But because things shift for various reasons, it was not held back at the same point as in the case of ancient Saturn. However, the process of origin is the same. In this way, as a result of the working together of all the cosmic powers belonging to the hierarchies, a small Saturn globe is born out of the mighty, voluminous, original Saturn. Let us consider more closely the moment on ancient Saturn when all the globes came to a standstill. The sages of primeval wisdom spoke of this moment as follows. The first foundation of the human physical body was formed on ancient Saturn. This earliest foundation was formed only out of warmth, but within this warmth body, all future organs were already present in seed form. At that point, where the initial movement again comes to rest, the seed is created for that organ in the human body, which, when the body is later set in motion, also ensures that all the functions of the physical body may be brought to rest again, that is, the heart. Here, from the first impulse of movement, the germ of the heart appears. But it only comes into existence in its first manifestation, so that the movement will again be brought to rest at this point. Thus the heart becomes that organ through which the entire physical body and all of its functions is brought to rest when the heart itself stops beating. In ancient languages, each member of the human body was identified with a very precise name. The heart was called the lion in the body. Thus the primeval world wisdom asked, quote, in which zodiacal direction must one point to find the region where the first seed of the human heart was planted? Unquote. They pointed upward and designated the thrones, seraphim and cherubim, who worked on the heart, the zone of the lion. The human being projected elements of the body into the cosmos, and the region of the body one is used to identifying as the inner manifestation of the lion was also identified outwardly as the region of the lion in the zodiac. This is how such matters relate to one another. All the other aspects of the human being were also formed through the zodiac. The heart was formed out of the region of the lion. The rib cage, which is near the heart and must exist for its protection, is referred to in the human body as the breastplate. Naturally, it must have been formed in the region next to and preceding the lion, that is, before the completion of the heart. Another name for breastplate was assigned, and the descriptive element was sought in an animal, which by nature also has such armor, the crab. The breastplate that appears in the zodiac is called Cancer, because the crab embodies a natural protective shield. Hence this region was called Cancer, and is to one side of the lion. The other regions of the zodiac were named according to the same principle. Indeed, the names of the various regions of the zodiac arise as a result of the human form being projected outward into the cosmos. It is not always easy to discover the original intention from the frequently distorted or misrepresented names, as you can see in an example such as Cancer. In several instances, the name has not been handed down correctly, and so one has to go back to the source to obtain a clear picture. For the moment, we shall not consider how Saturn disappears, how it is dissolved again. We want to discuss how evolution proceeds after a pralaya runs out. A new evolution begins. The first phase that occurs is exactly the same as what previously occurred on Saturn. After this, all of Saturn existence repeats itself. A second formation begins again from the center point. We come now to the next stage of evolution, which we usually designate as the development of Old Sun. Just as previously the thrones sacrificed themselves, we now have the sacrifice of another rank of the spiritual hierarchies, the dominions or spirits of wisdom. The thrones are mightier beings. They were able to trickle forth physical and warmth substantiality, were able out of their own bodies to bring forth the substance of Saturn as we have described. The dominions or spirits of wisdom are able to sacrifice only an etheric body, which is thinner. The human being already possessed the foundations of a physical body. To this, the dominions or spirits of wisdom now added an etheric body. This happened in a second circumference, as it were. I draw here a second circumference. This represents the original size of the old sun, shrunk in comparison to the former larger circumference. In this process of contracting, it has also become more dense. As a result, the possibility arises that inside the old sun there is not only warmth substance, but densified warmth substance, a gaseous, airy substance. Now, out of the periphery, the beings previously mentioned, the thrones, together with the dominions, begin to work, and within the circumference of the sun, only the powers and the mights, or the spirits of form and the spirits of movement, remain. The other beings work from the periphery, inward. The following now occurs in a way similar to what occurred on ancient Saturn. Certain currents form, which were created by the spirits at the periphery, the thrones, and now work in cooperation with the dominions. As a result, these currents are somewhat denser than those the thrones alone had earlier activated. Inside, this mass contracts, and one globe of mist after another is produced between the activity of the two currents. This globe is different from the Saturn globe, in that Saturn, with all its beings, was composed only of warmth substance, and everything, so to speak, was astir in the space around it. But this globe is permeated by ether, an etheric bodily substance. Although the globe is only as dense as gas, it is interpenetrated by an ether body. As a result, the whole globe is a living being. It is inwardly alive. Saturn was an inwardly dynamic being, full of mobility until it was brought to a standstill by the lion. But this globe that we can call Jupiter is inwardly alive. Parenthesis, we can call it Jupiter because the planet Jupiter, as seen in the heavens, is a repetition of a part that split off from the old sun. Parenthesis. Thus we have the old sun. The globes around it are circling, living globes, grand living beings. Instead of Leo, you must now think of another region of the zodiac, the region of the eagle, where these globes were originally created. In this region lies the original impulse that led to the creation of the sun globe, this living being in cosmic space. When this living globe has completed its journey along the entire circumference, it returns to the region of the eagle. But now something different happens. Whereas before each globe was infused at this point with life, it is now killed on its return by the same influence that originally called it to life. One globe after another is slain. When all have been killed and no further globes come into being, the existence of the old sun comes to an end. Life consists here of the creation of new globes. When they return to this place, they are killed by cosmic forces. The sting of death inflicted by the cosmos on the life of the old sun was experienced as the, quote, sting of the scorpion, unquote. So, because that region inflicts death, it is called the region of Scorpio. The scorpion. At this position may be seen the constellation of the eagle, which brings dead matter to life, and the constellation that sends forth the forces of death, Scorpio. The forces in the zodiac that brought to rest primordial life in the physical organization of the human being are in the region of the lion. The forces that have the capacity to destroy life as such are in the region of Scorpio. It remains for us to become acquainted with the context of conditions today, which are, of course, differently constituted, but can only happen gradually. A thick veil or maya has been drawn over the original conditions. Let us proceed. We don't need to consider the next set of circumstances in such a thorough way, because the significance of these relationships and the entire process appears before us. The following, however, must be remembered. Basically, what kind of body is Saturn? It is a warmth body. When you look at Saturn, you would be very wrong if you assumed Saturn to be a body that can be compared with other planets, such as Jupiter or Mars. What exists there is actually no more than an expanse of warmth. You only see it as you do because you can look at it through an expanse of light. You glimpse it through illuminated space. Visualize how an unilluminated object appears when seen through a light-filled space. It would appear bluish. You can observe this in the flame of a candle. The flame appears blue in the middle and is surrounded by a kind of radiance. If you look at darkness through illuminated space, it always appears blue. I am very aware that I am in danger of talking nonsense according to the modern mechanistic school of optics. The fact is, this nonsense is correct. Modern physics does not know why the expanse of the heavens looks blue. It appears blue to you because it is, in fact, dark, black, and you see it through an illuminated space. Darkness seen through the light appears blue. That is why Saturn, when you observe it, also appears as a somewhat bluish cosmic body. Everything said here agrees with the facts of science, but not with the fanciful theories that have been contrived around them. It would lead too far astray if I explained to you, along the same lines, the cause of the rings of Saturn, because with each Saturn one is concerned. Let me read that again. It would lead too far astray if I explained to you, along the same lines, the cause of the rings of Saturn, because with each Saturn one is concerned with three layers of warmth, a neutral layer, a layer of soul warmth, and a physically perceptible warmth. When looking at these various layers through an illuminated space, the illusion of a gaseous globe arises, surrounded by a kind of dust ring. We are simply experiencing an optical phenomenon. Saturn is still today a heavenly body consisting only of warmth substance. These things can, of course, be said only in a context such as the current one. Otherwise, one could not understand them. Each Saturn must be addressed while recognizing that it is composed in essence of warmth substance. Everything regarding this Saturn is explained in this context. Every Jupiter, which is nothing more than a stage of solar existence, is a formation composed mainly of gas and warmth. So it is with today's Jupiter, which is a repetition of ancient Jupiter. Of course, the relationships within space and concerning movement change somewhat. The present Jupiter is not at exactly the same position it was earlier, but basically it is. Let us now proceed and elucidate the Mars phenomenon in the same way. Mars originated as a result of the cooling of a gigantic globe into the fluid state until it finally separated from the general misty, watery mass into a compressed globe of water. Again, this occurred because the watery globes that arose at the periphery were held back at a particular point. Just as the lion halted movement on Saturn, and Scorpio brought about death on Jupiter, so on Mars the watery globes are brought to rest. To be sure, the details about Mars are somewhat different than those of Jupiter and Saturn. Mars today is a repetition of Old Moon. The Old Moon reached as far as the present position of Mars. Mars is the other piece of Old Moon. One piece is the present moon, which is dross. The living remnant, which represents the other pole, remained with the present Mars in the course of the repetition. In this sense, Mars is the third condition of our planetary evolution, and it corresponds to the stage of Old Moon. Mars is essentially a water body. During the period of the Old Moon, or Old Mars, if you prefer, human beings received their astral body, or, in other words, the first form of consciousness. The human body at that time consisted of a watery Mars or Moon substance. Just as the human body today is composed of earthly substances, so the human body at that time consisted of fire, air, and water. According to the densest substance they contained, human beings of that time could be termed water beings. The human being became a water being above all because the astral body had been implanted into the being. This human being was not yet an I being. It was a human being endowed with an astral body. This occurred after an impulse was given at a particular point, moved around the course of the circle, and came back to the same point from which it first set forth. This point became the region in the zodiac known as the Waterman, Aquarius. Here the significance of the zodiacal sign of Waterman can be found, for there humankind received consciousness on the Old Moon, or Old Mars, after having completed a single circuit. We come now to the Earth, which represents the fourth stage of development. The three earlier stages are repeated. Saturn is formed, Sun is formed, and leaves Jupiter behind, which is a repetition of the Sun. Moon is formed, and leaves Mars behind. And finally the Earth emerges, as I have described it, severed from the Sun, with the part that separated as lunar dross. You know that the I, capital, first began in the time of ancient Lemuria, when the present Moon separated from Earth. That could happen only because, once again, an impulse came from the periphery that resulted in the completion of one rotation. Sufficient maturity had now been attained in order to receive the first beginnings of the I. This happened during ancient Lemuria. For this we point to the position in the zodiac referred to today as the bull, Taurus. When this designation was created, humankind could still experience the reality of this name very clearly and concretely. In its most essential manifestation, the name originated in the secret doctrine of the Egyptians and Chaldeans. We can find its origins there, and a consciousness of the correct meaning of the word only exists today within the true mystery teachings. The very first stirring, or tendency toward the I am, is expressed in speech, in sound. All sound formation is connected in a certain way with the forces of procreation. This should not be touched on here, but it is familiar to every occultist. The breaking of the voice at puberty, for example, is connected in a definite way with the powers of propagation. There is a hidden relationship between them. Everything related to this human capacity and activity was summed up by ancient consciousness as the bull nature of the human being. From that capacity arose the name of this particular zodiacal sign, which has the same meaning for the earth that the lion has for Saturn, that Scorpio has for Jupiter, and that the waterman has for Mars. As the Egyptian period approached, so too came the third post-Atlantean culture. First came the ancient Indian, the second was the ancient Persian, and the third was the Egyptian cultural epoch. These periods of civilization represent stages of repetition of the development of the Earth as a whole. The Lemurian era was the third period of the Earth's development. Egyptian mystery teaching repeats, therefore, essentially a spiritual reflection of what occurred in Lemurian times. What happened in Lemurian times was best known to the priests of the Egyptian mysteries, for these occurrences were reflected in the particular culture of Egypt. That is why Egyptian civilization felt a particular kinship with the constellation of the bull and with the cult of the bull in general. So, now you will understand that it is by no means easy to describe the real processes that led to the origin of our heavenly bodies and what occurred in relation to them. How does a heavenly body originate? Our Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, and so on originated thus. First, sheaths formed themselves. One after the other was destroyed in turn, and when the process of calling into life concluded, then the global formations that had previously shaped the sheaths coalesced to form a single creation of circumference. Celestial bodies such as Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars came about because originally a type of sheath existed. The heavenly bodies densified into a creation in that one globe was laid on top of another so as to become visible in cosmic space. Here you have nothing of a mechanical process or the dreary theories of Kant Laplace. Rather, here you have a living picture of how, as a result of the spiritual workings of the hierarchies, heavenly bodies such as Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars originated. The end of Lecture 8.